This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, brought to you by Arrowhead Land Company. Here you will be educated, entertained, and equipped to get more out of your outdoor experience. So hold on tight, because here we go. What's going on, folks? Welcome to the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. I am your host, John Hudspeth. Welcome to the show. We have a really good, we have a longer than usual episode this week, but it's for a good reason. One, we had an awesome guest this week that we'll get to here in a little bit, and I think me and him went about an hour and a half, so just a longer interview than normal. But I also want to take a little bit time here at the beginning to talk about this new bill that I hinted at last week, and I just want to say right now, I am not a biologist. I am not a geneticist. I am not a politician. So I'm trying to, you know, read and understand this bill and everything it surrounds. And I'm also trying to look at it as unbiased as humanly possible. So I just wanted to throw that disclaimer out there. A lot of this stuff is also way over my head, talking about proteins and codons. And I don't even know if I'm saying that word right. But like I said, I've done a lot of research to try to simplify and explain this bill to you guys. So bear with me, and we're going to try to get through this together. So this bill that I'm referring to is Bill 3462, and in a nutshell, it is the Chronic Wasting Disease Genetic Improvement Act. Nice little mouthful there. And just kind of give you guys an idea of, you know, the political side of this. It passed in the House 69-3, and it passed in the Senate 42-0. So very little opposition to this. Basically, kind of went right through. I looked up the history, and there were a few little revisions. Most of that actually had to do with like funding. You know, where the money was going to come from. It seemed like a lot of the people who vote on this weren't so much concerned about what it was as they were, how much it would cost the state. And then according to this bill summary, it says it's going to cost the state $0 because they basically have a plan to pay for it using Hunter dollars. And we'll get into that in a second. I'm going to go towards the end of the bill first. In Section 2, really the only thing in Section 2 is that it says this act shall become effective October 1st of 2024. So October of this year, this bill will be effective. And then if you go back up to Section 1B, it says no later than November 1st, 2024, the Oklahoma Department of Agriculture, Food, and Forestry shall establish a pilot program to enhance the genetic durability of Oklahoma deer against chronic wasting disease. So it's supposed to be implemented October 1st, and it has to be in place by November 1st of this year again. So I'm going to break down the, I'm putting this in big air quotes, scientific side, because it's really important to understand what they are trying to accomplish and kind of basically their thinking behind it. And so I've done a bunch of research and Googling, and I'm going to do my best to explain some very, very scientific, complicated things in redneck terms that people like you and I can understand. So I am on the website. This is the National Library of Medicine. And one thing that it specifically states in this, I'll go ahead and read this next part because I think you need to understand it. So it says, the Department of Wildlife Conservation will begin collecting DNA samples to establish a baseline of average genetic codon markers and genomic breeding values for native free-ranging Oklahoma whitetail deer. Again, if I butchered some of those terms, I apologize. But what that means, that word codon, C-O-D-O-N, again, I apologize if I'm pronouncing it wrong, but according to this Library of Medicine, basically what they understand of CWD is that CWD is a protein, and these proteins are measured in these codons. Again, I am not a biologist. This is just what I'm trying to figure out. And so when the bill talks about establishing a baseline, what they're doing is they're testing these deer, and they're saying, all right, deer with this codon level have CWD. Deer with this codon level do not have CWD. And I don't know if that's more or less, couldn't tell you. But essentially, this baseline they're talking about is they're saying, all right, if the codon level is above or below whatever this number is, we think that that deer is CWD resistant. So that is step one. They're going to test all these deer, figure out that level, figure out what is considered CWD resistant. Step two is they are going to go and seek out captive deer. And it does say in the bill that all these deer will be from Oklahoma. So they're not going to go to other states. They're not going to go to Ohio or Texas or anything like that. These will be, quote, Oklahoma raised deer. Now, whether that's, you know, one generation, two generations raised in Oklahoma, I don't know. But the plan is to use Oklahoma deer. They're going to test these deer, and they're going to get these codon levels. And basically any deer that is, you know, above or below that threshold, whatever it may be, those will then qualify for this program. The next step to this basically just kind of jumps right into it. So beginning in 2026, during the months of February and March and through the 15th of April, bred female and male deer may be released. And so they've tested these deer. They've said they meet the threshold or whatever. And beginning in the spring of 2026, they're going to start releasing these deer out into the wild. And it says they're going to be releasing male and female deer. The next thing I'm not a huge fan of, so this is 3C. The Oklahoma Department of Agriculture, Food, and Forestry and the Department of Wildlife Conservation may promulgate rules as needed to implement the provisions of this act. So that's basically a fancy way of saying, you know, they're basically allowed to make changes. Like whatever, if they see something that they think needs to be done, they can do it. The reason I am not big on that one is because I don't know what regulation they are held to. Like, does it have to go to a vote? Do they have to ask, does the governor have to sign off of it? I feel like that's pretty vague as far as regulations go. So not a huge fan of that one. Some of you may like this next one. this goes back to, I hinted how they were going to pay for it. The Department of Wildlife Conservation may charge a one-time permit fee, which shall not exceed $500, for citizens purchasing deer as a result of the criteria established in the pilot program. So, again, what that says to me is essentially they're selling it like a tag almost, or a license. So you pay $500 and they can come release these deer on your property. Now, again, this is not like a high fence situation. So, you know, you can't pin them in. Like, they're going to come and just turn them loose. So if you have, you know, 80 acres and they come turn this deer out, there's no guarantee that deer is going to stay on your property. But it is a cool way for them to pay for it. Cause I know there's probably going to be a lot of people volunteering, for this. Actually me and, my guest today, we talked about it a little bit and, he seemed pretty excited about the aspect of it, but so that pretty much covers the bill. I mean, it's pretty short. It's basically page and a half, if that. So my thoughts. I personally, you know, the more I've thought about it, the more I've decided that I just do not feel like this is a great idea. Namely, the first one is, if you talk to most of the, you know, CWD experts, whether it be an organization, a single person, or whatever, they pretty much agree that this is how this disease got out of control in the first place, is the captive deer industry. Now, that's not to say that hunters didn't play a part of it. You know, if you went and hunted out of state in a place that had CWD, brought that carcass back, and then threw it out, you know, behind your house or whatever, like, that carcass is infected and could then affect deer in the local area. So it's not just the captive deer industry. But they do think that the captive deer industry, you know, fast-forwarded this a whole lot, just transporting deer all over the country and spreading deer around. So it seems a little odd that, like, the very way that they think this disease spread is now they think that that's going to somehow solve it. So, yeah, that I don't know. As far as the whole codon thing, like, again, I'm not a biologist. I don't even know if I'm saying that word right. But I just don't know if we know enough about this disease yet to say that, like, okay, that deer right there is not going to get CWD. I think if it was that simple, they would have figured that out a while ago. Granted, I don't know what they would have done with that information. But I just don't know if it's that simple. And then also just the fact of, like, you know, I don't know what kind of numbers they're talking about. It doesn't lay it out here, but releasing 100 captive deer out into our deer population of several hundred thousand, I just don't see that doing any good. You know, you're talking about a single drop in a 5-gallon bucket of water. And so even if these deer go out there and breed and do their thing and it works like they think it do, you know, how many generations is that going to take to actually take effect? So that's another reason I'm not a big fan of it. You know, I talked to somebody who was also kind of, he was in agreement with me in a lot of it. And he was wondering if maybe this was more of a antler thing than a CWD thing. Like, they were going to be trying to, you know, like, up the antler quality of Oklahoma deer. I don't really see that being a viable option. Like, I don't see the state going out and buying like a $50,000, you know, 300-inch breeder buck. Like, I just don't see them spending that money. And I definitely don't see them taking that deer and then just going and turning it loose in the wild. And, you know, like, I've done some research just on deer in general, and, you know, a lot of research is done on captive herds. And I'm thinking about, like, Mississippi State has a captive herd. They do a ton of research. But I've seen the deer in their captive herds, and they're not these, like, high fence, you know, 250-inch typical freaks. They're just normal deer. Like, they're, you know, 135-inch 8-points, a lot of them. And so, like, if that's the type of deer that they're going to be releasing, like, that's just not anything special to a lot of people. And so, like, I don't think you're going to get this huge antler bump on your property because they come and release these deer out. Especially, like I said, if you're have a smaller property, I just don't see that happening. Now, if they did, if they were buying these giant bucks and turning them loose, then yes, like those genetics can't hurt. I'm just saying, I don't think that's going to be the deer that they're releasing on this thing. So, I don't know if I have a say in it. Like, I think this thing is going. So just kind of to wrap my thoughts up, because again, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, just trying to give you guys what I think. Personally, I don't think it's a good idea. I think there is just as good of a chance of them releasing these deer and releasing some other disease out into the wild herd than it is stopping this particular disease. I don't think they can release enough deer to really make an impact. Even if they were successful and they do, figure out this whole protein thing. So personally, I just don't see it being a good idea. And I just don't know if it's worth spending all the money on this, even though they, said, quote, it was going to cost $0. It's costing somebody money. Like, these deer aren't free, and they're not getting them from people for free. So I just don't see how it costs the state $0. So yeah, that's my take. I think, I don't know how long I spent on that. I hope that was informative to you guys. I hope I wasn't just knocking it, even though I'm not agreeing with it. So I do want you guys to make your own opinions, and I would love to hear from you guys on what you think. If somebody's listening to this and they have like a good contact of someone who I could have on the show and they could explain this better, better than me, a non-biology student, I would welcome that. Absolutely. Please reach out to me or have them reach out to me. I would love to have somebody on the show that could explain this better than I can. So, all right, that's going to do it. Like I said, we have a nice long episode this week, so I don't want to take up any more of you guys' time. Today we have Julius Craig on of Delta Flage Outdoors. Julius is a really cool guy. He actually reached out to me, and he has his own show, and he asked if we could kind of do like a dual podcast, and so we kind of take turns being host. Get to talk about a lot of really cool stuff. We talk about out-of-state hunting, Nebraska, Colorado. I briefly retell the story of my truck getting stolen. And then we also just talk a lot about Oklahoma and kind of more of the off-the-radar stuff. Like, we don't talk much deer. We talk more, bears and antelope and elk and the point system and all that good stuff. So kind of a cool refresher if you're not very familiar with that stuff. We cover that pretty well, and like I said, it's a really nice long episode, so I hope you guys enjoy it. I'll go ahead and shut up and let us get to the real episode. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'd love hearing from you guys. That'll do it for me. So we'll get into the episode with Julius right now. Hey everybody, welcome to today's show, and today we got a really cool guest. We have Mr. Julius Craig. How you doing, Julius?
I'm good. How are you, John?
Oh, not too bad. Can't complain. Really excited about this one. You actually reached out to me. And for the listeners, Julius is the host of the Delta Flage Outdoors podcast. And so we decided to do a little kind of dual podcast here. And so we're going to be kind of flipping back and forth in the host chair and just having a really cool conversation. But before we get going too far, Julius, why don't you just give everybody a little introduction?
Hey, it's Julius Craig with Delta Flage Outdoors. Like John said, I reached out to him to put this one together because I moved to Oklahoma about 2 years ago. I got into John's podcast probably about 6 months ago and was like, man, I got to reach out to this dude and see if we can do one together. He sounds pretty cool. And just kind of bounce stuff off of each other because you've hunted out of state with Nebraska and everything. And that's somewhere I'm planning on going in this year. Like we were talking before we started recording, both of us have Kansas in mind. And being from South Louisiana, coming to Oklahoma to hunt, I actually hunted Oklahoma about January of the year. I moved up here in 2022. The January of 22, I drove out here and hunted a place in Mangum and was like, oh, this is awesome. Then I got the opportunity to move here with work the August of 22. So we moved up here and went from there. And I took a bunch of time. I took about a year off from doing anything with Delta Flage with my podcast and everything, then started it back. This past October, I think is when I started back. It'd been exactly when I put that started season two here, I guess if you'll call it that, it had been exactly 1 year since I posted my last podcast. And so I've been doing them weekly again, trying to get them out. And I wanted to reach out and talk to you because we listen to your stuff. Like, it's you've killed some pretty awesome deer, and you've put some time in to like learn your home areas and hold out on getting like the, you know, the 2% buck that you talked about and everything. It was just, so I was like, I want to talk to this guy. So gotcha. That's how we got to where we are.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I was doing a little research on you, and I just listened to your episode with Dan Infault. So you've had some pretty big names on your show, which is really cool. So I'm excited. And so I think, you know, let's go ahead and just kick this thing off, if that's all right with you, now that we got to know each other a little bit. And you mentioned Nebraska. You just want to start there? Let's start in Nebraska.
Sounds great. That's what, like I said, I'm, I know, like you said, they sell like 10,000 tickets. You gotta be Johnny on the spot. No tags to get it. But, I'm looking at doing public land, and, you know, and you've hit it, you've hunted some public and private up there. What's your take on it?
Man, so first off, the whole Johnny on the spot thing, that is true. So I believe last year was the first year that they limited non-residents. And so I had an alarm set. I think I actually screwed up. I stayed up till midnight the day of to go, you know, to try to get a tag, and then come to find out, I don't think they went on sale till like 1 p.m. something like that. So first off, you need to make sure you know what time they go on sale, because it's not midnight, or at least it wasn't last year. And I did. So yeah, I got a license, and I remember checking in the next day, and there were still some available the next day, but they went pretty quick. You know, the first couple days they were out. So yeah, getting a tag is definitely the big thing up there. So I've now deer hunted in Nebraska twice, 2 years, the last 2 years. And I'm pretty fortunate. So my sister moved up there. She married a guy who his family is from up there. And so I have some access to their private land. And the first year I went, that was my whole plan, because I think I only got to hunt like 2 days, maybe 2.5 days. And I went for the September 1st opener, you know, trying to get a velvet deer. And so drove up there. I had been there one time, but not to hunt. I'd just been there to visit. It was actually before my sister even moved up there. My dad and brother and I went to a farm show up there. I was ranching at the time. So I had not scouted, not done anything, never been there. And I did not get a deer, didn't even get close to getting a deer that first trip. But I did learn a lot of valuable information. And the first thing I learned was it's not that difficult to get permission from landowners. And again, I kind of cheated because I had it in, because my sister's father-in-law, he knows everybody around. But I was just hunting their land, and I remember they had a piece that was across like this really deep creek, and I couldn't get across. I didn't bring waders, and I was trying to figure out how to get over there. And I asked my sister's father-in-law, his name is Kenny. I asked Kenny, and he's like, "Well, why don't you just go over there on Dale's and walk around?" And I was like, "Well, can I do that?" And he's like, "Oh yeah." I was like, "Well, you know, do you mind call?" Yeah, he was like, "Do you mind calling him and asking him?" And he's like, "Oh sure." And so I thought of it. Kind of, I was like, "Hey, like, do you mind asking him also if I could like maybe just hunt on his side?" He's like, "Oh yeah, I'm sure that wouldn't be a problem." And so he called him, and sure enough, I had permission. So then I pull up my Onyx, and I'm looking at this place across the street from what is now my sister's house, but one of their properties. And I was like, "Hey, do you know these people?" He's like, "Oh, that's, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so." I was like, do you think you could call them?" He's like, "Oh yeah, I'll call them right now." And so I think when I drove up there, I had like 300 or 400 acres to hunt. And when I came home, I had like 1,000 acres to hunt. And, you know, like I said, now my sister lives up there, and she hunts a little bit, not a ton, and her husband. But this is coming from them. Like, if somebody asks permission to hunt on somebody else's place, it's almost rude for them to say no. Now, if you're a complete stranger from out of state and they don't know you, then yes, obviously you have a higher percentage chance of them telling you no. But one other thing that I've learned from being up there is like bow hunting is just not that big from what I've seen. A lot of people who do hunt up there, it's all rifle hunting, which is, you know, doesn't come in till like around Thanksgiving. So like if I tried to go back to those same places I have permission now to try to rifle hunt, I'm not sure I'd have the same luck. But if I call them up like, "Hey, it's September 1st, it's hot, and I'm trying to kill a deer with the bow," they're basically like, well, you're an idiot. Sure, you can go try. And so that'd be my first tip is, you know, whether you go up there strictly to hunt public or not, if you see a deer when you're driving around or something, don't be afraid to go knock on somebody's door and ask permission.
Okay. Yeah, that's what, you know, and like with me being from South Louisiana, that's not something you're accustomed to. Like mm-hmm. you're, you know, nobody wants anybody on the property.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's where I live at here in Oklahoma, everybody's like, they're pretty lenient with like, hey, whatever. And it's like, when it comes to like, most of my neighbors would probably be okay with you bow hunting, but none of them would be like, nah, you're not getting a rifle. Mm-hmm. So I get that. And it's like, and that was something that was a little different to me up here too, because I'm that, where I'm from in South Louisiana, it's not like that. Like,
yeah,
everybody's got cameras. You end up going on the wrong side, like you're plastered all over Facebook. Who's this trespasser?
Yeah.
And that was something I listened to your podcast that you talked about, and I was like, wow, that's cool. And I know another thing you talked about too is the crop rotations.
Yep.
And that plays a big role. Like, correct me if I'm wrong here. If it's soybeans or if they're planting soybeans, you got a better shot earlier in the year than if you do if it's corn. Corn's more of your like late season, right?
So that was what I thought going up there, but that is actually not what I found to be true now that I've been up there and hunted a little bit. And again, I don't know what time of year you're planning on going. If you're planning to go September or later on,
might be a September bow hunt.
Okay. So what I found is about that time of year, even like this last trip, I was there, I think for 4 or 5 days, those beans were turning at that time. You know, you always hear about like people from the Midwest who hunt soybeans all the time. You always hear about, you know, when they're green and then when they turn yellow. So that is about the time they turn yellow. And as soon as those beans turn yellow, from what I've seen, those deer don't care about them anymore. And so that was like the first, like when I was up there the first year, and then this last year, the first day I hunted, I was like, oh, gotta hunt beans. Like that's where the deer are going to be. But like I said, like once I kind of got up in my stand and got over the fact of, oh, sweet, I get to hunt a soybean field, because that's, you know, something I don't get to do at home. When I really started paying attention, a lot of those beans had kind of yellowed and I wasn't seeing deer. And just because that corn is still, you know, up tall and not falling apart or anything like that, those deer can still get to that corn. Like they'll eat it with it standing like that. The biggest thing I found, especially this last year, because they've had some pretty hot, dry summers the last couple of years. This last year, what I found is I had to be literally on water to see deer. So my first hunt, I was hunting some beans that I thought were still pretty green. Didn't see a single deer. The next hunt, I was basically trying to get close to this corner where some beans and corn came together. And I just, for wind purposes, I set up on this creek, and every deer I saw that evening came out of that creek. The next morning, I hunted the same stand, and every deer I saw was going into that creek. The next day, I went to another piece of property. It was actually that piece I was talking about with the neighbor that let me go around. I got permission on them again. And I was, again, I was facing the corn. Like, I was really hunting the corn, but I was on the creek. And I don't know if you heard that episode or not, but I had about a 3.5-year-old 10-point come within 4 yards of me up out of that creek. And we just stood there eye to eye for a few minutes, and he eventually ran off. I didn't get a shot. But yeah, that early September hunt, if it's been hot and dry, I would say water is almost more important than crops. Now, obviously they're going to work their way, you know, out to that food in the evenings. But if you're not relating that to water, I just don't know if you're going to be in the game.
Okay. Like I said, that's something I wanted to know. And, cause that'll be a new, like hunting crops and everything is new to me, literally, like we're talking about before we started recording, like hunting Oklahoma, flat parts of Oklahoma and everything mm-hmm. was a change to me, or hunting hill country is a change to me. And I know people laugh when I say call Oklahoma hill country, but
right.
When you're from South Louisiana, you know, this is the start of hill country.
Right.
And then that's like my place there where I have, like we're talking about, it has a, we didn't talk about, you know, just, how it lays out, but I've got I've got 80 acres I own, and about 20 of it's woods, and it's 15 of it's in the back and goes into a ravine. Mm-hmm. Every set I made last year, I think I hunted 3 times by myself, and I saw deer. The morning I killed the 11 point we were talking about, I literally overslept and got into my stand and saw the deer. I pre-hung my platform and everything because I hunt out of a saddle, so I just left my, I pre-hung it with my aider. And the one I'll use at my house, like I use a 3-step aider if I'm traveling and doing my pre-hung sets at my house. I have like a 4 and 5-step aider on them. So, you know, you're getting a little higher out of just the one if you don't want to move up. Mm-hmm. Literally that morning I got in the stand, I scared 2 does off getting to the stand because I was that late. It was like 7:15. Mm-hmm. Get in the stand, get set up, strap, you know, like hang my rifle, trying to adjust some stuff. And I think it was a total 3.5-4 minutes after I got there, the deer came out. And so it ended up shooting him. Like I said, I probably shouldn't have, but it was yes, no, yes, no. Then I did not, because I was like mistaken for a different deer, and I was like, crap. But it was the time frame was so short. My wife actually texted me, and she's like, are you okay? I was like, what? She's like, was that you that just shot? Like, you haven't even had time to get to the stand. I'm like, no, I literally just got the stand. I was like, but that was me. I was like, I'm coming up to get the tracker. And I got up, got the tractor. My youngest son went with me. We got the deer. And I actually posted the video on Facebook, me and him going to get it. And I'm like, and in the video, I'm like, hey, watch the gate. Cause he's driving the tractor and he's 9. And he's not paying attention to the gate. He's smiling for the camera. And I'm like, you know, so we go back there and we get it back up there and we're done cleaning it and everything. My 11-year-old gets up and he's like, oh, you didn't go hunting this morning? Like, literally, we were done with everything for my 11-year-old even got out of bed. Uh-huh. And I was like, well, you know, and it was the day after Thanksgiving. And then after that, I took my oldest son doesn't really like hunting. My youngest son dies, like he lives and breathes it. He's 9. I got him for Christmas, a custom gear modifications pygmy rattler saddle. Uh-huh. And he's been climbing with it and everything. I didn't let him start using it until like about a month ago. I started teaching him because I was like, I want warm weather. And so him trying to learn in deer season and all that. And and like I said, he got it at Christmas. So season was almost over. And I was like, I'm not going to make him learn with a crap ton of clothes on right now. And so he's been using it. But we made 6 hunts, saw deer every time. And just sitting on the ground or a makeshift ground blind, everything. Like he lives and breathes hunting. And he's like I said, he's 9. He knows I want to hunt Nebraska this year. Like I said, I put in for the draw for Kansas. I'm putting in for points for Kansas. In a couple years, but he's like, Dad, when can I start going on these hunts with you? I'm like, you got to get a little bigger, son. Mm-hmm. He's like, well, I need to start practicing on my bow more so I can get what poundage I got to be able to draw. I'm like, all right. But, you know, it's like, but that was the thing I wanted to like get you to cover like you did with Nebraska. And I'm going to go off. I've kind of just rambled there and went off, but I do have a question. And if I missed it in your podcast that you've done, send me to the one, and this is might be a tender subject. When your truck got sold that time, did you ever get any of the stuff back?
Go ahead.
Because maybe I overlooked like the whole. I know you got the truck back, but any, right. But that was it that I recall hearing.
Pretty much. So yeah, it got stolen. You know, before my hunt, I still went on the hunt with a bunch of borrowed stuff and some stuff I threw together at Cabela's in Denver, got back to Denver from the hunt and was going to fly home. And I called the police department just to check in. They hadn't found anything. And so I went ahead and flew home. I was home for about a week and a half, and they called and said they had found the truck. And so I flew back up there and, you know, they had towed it to an impoundment and all that. And so the police, when they found it, they had taken out anything that they considered valuable before it went to the impoundment. So I got back my spotting scope and binoculars, and I got back my Stone Glacier pack, which was, you know, pretty awesome. That's an expensive bag. What's funny is they ran out of room from all the other stuff they had stolen. And so they went through the Stone Glacier pack, which was completely packed with all my hunting stuff, and they stole a bunch of stuff out of it. but they didn't actually steal the pack, which is funny because that's like a $500 or $600 pack, you know. Stole my Yeti, my gun, I mean, all that stuff. So yeah, I never got my gun or four-wheeler or anything like that. I basically got my pack, my glass, my video camera, and that was about it. All my camo was gone, boots were gone, cooler was gone, gun was gone. So that, I mean, they got a pretty good haul.
Yeah. And like I said, I was like, I knew you got a little bit of the stuff back mm-hmm. from it, but I didn't know if you'd ever, you know, fast forward to now, if you'd ever heard anything, got anything else.
Nope. So. I did hear from somebody back home who is a police officer. They said they wouldn't be surprised if someday I get my gun back, because they said eventually, you know, it'll probably be sold or something or pawned, and they'll run that serial number and it'll pop up as stolen. And they said they've actually heard quite a few stories of people getting their guns back like years later. So not hold my breath. Yeah. I've already replaced it. You know, a couple of my buddies, they started to GoFundMe and were able to raise quite a bit of money for me to replace the gun. First Light actually got hold of the story. They sent me quite a bit of camo. And so it, you know, it's, there was a little bit of a bright side. Obviously I would not do it again if, you know, if I could go back in time, but it wasn't all bad.
So have you been back to Colorado to hunt since then?
I have not. yeah, that I still haven't decided. So I used all my elk points on that hunt, but I still have 5 or 6 mule deer points. And so I will go back at some point. I'm not going to stop in Denver. I'm either just going to drive straight through, or I'm going to stop somewhere, you know, way before that, like still in Oklahoma or Kansas or something, and push through. So I'm not completely off of it. But I think I mentioned in that episode that one of my Uber drivers told me that Denver was averaging, I think it was 87 car thefts a day. And so obviously, you know, the out-of-state license plate and the four-wheeler in the back, you know, they knew what I was there to do. They knew that was a good truck to steal. So yeah, all that to say, I think I will go back to Colorado, but I will be much more careful about where I go.
Well, funny part of that, like probably the week, like I said, I started listening to your podcast and starting to drive a bunch, like mm-hmm. to work back and forth. It's like 10 hours a week of drive time. So I was like, I listened to that one probably the following week or two after I listened to that one. My wife, I didn't get to go, but like my wife and kids and all my in-laws, I had to work, couldn't take off. They all went to just out of Aspen. Uh-huh. And I'm laughing because I'm like, hey, be careful where you park the truck, because my wife's truck's a 2019 F-150 4-door full-wheel drive and everything. And I'm like,
that's about what I was in. Yeah.
I know, that's what, and I'm laughing. I'm like, don't get the truck stolen.
Yep.
And yeah, it's like, so when we go up that way, like we'll stay in Raton, New Mexico. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Then go up. Yeah. Cause that's pretty safe place to stay right there and everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what side of you were going to, but when she was going, I was like, stay in Raton. Don't do this. Don't stay anywhere. I was like, once you get to where y'all going, just leave our vehicle. Mm-hmm. Cause it's safe where I know where it's at, and just ride with your family.
Yep.
She's like, what are you talking about? And I told her, and like, she's like, oh wow, that sucks. I'm like, oh yeah. But I said, I can imagine. Cause like, I can just imagine walking out and like, what the heck, man. Mm-hmm. And then that far from home, just, you know, it's.
Oh yeah. That was the weirdest. That was the weirdest thing. Walking out of the hotel room and looking where I parked the truck and it just not being there. And I turned around like 3 different times. Like I walked back towards the lobby and I was like, I was probably just looking in the wrong spot. Turned around, went. I was like, okay, it's still not here. Walked inside. I was like, God, like, did I drink last night or something? Walked out. Like I kept going out there expecting it to just be there and it wasn't.
No, that's what I was in camp, just out of Camp Lejeune. Walked out one morning and the toolbox was open on my truck and they'd stolen a bunch of tools. Yeah. And oddly enough, they stole like the battery pack, you know, like drills and everything. Right.
Uh-huh.
There was 3 brand new in the box still, nail guns for roofing.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't steal them. They just moved them to the side and stole like,
yep.
And it was like the battery pack stuff. And I'm laughing because it wasn't even like expensive stuff. It was Ryobi stuff. They stole maybe $300 worth of drills and batteries.
Mm-hmm.
And the job, we've been there for like a week and a half, and it just wasn't going the way it was supposed to be going, like bouncing us around and everything. And I walked out and I saw that morning. I looked at like my cousins who were with me. It was myself and like four of my cousins. I was like, y'all got an hour to get packed. I was like, I'm headed back to South Louisiana. They're like, we don't need an hour. I was like, what do you mean? We packed last night. They had all met and talked about it the night before, like that night. They was like, and I'm like, well, did y'all steal my stuff to make me change? And they was like, no, we don't have it.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, let's go. But yeah, I was just, like, it's a bad way to put it, but you just feel so violated.
Oh yeah. 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 For sure.
You know, it's like, you're angry and like, it's like, what the heck, man? It's like, but I know when I listened to that, I was like, wow, that would suck being that far. That was like the Nebraska and that was two of the biggest things that stood out to me, because it was like to have a group of friends and then like first light do that, everything tells you what the type of company they are, then the friends that you had, like, sounds like you got some pretty good friends.
Yeah.
And that would just be, I don't know if I could have made the hunt after that. I just,
it was rough. It was, I called my wife and told her what happened, and I was still, I was still trying to figure out myself what I wanted to do. And she really encouraged me to go ahead and go. She was like, you're going to have to spend a bunch of money on new stuff anyway, you know, whether you do it there or here. And she's like, if you come home, all you're going to do is just sulk around wishing you had, were hunting. And so it was really tough though. And, the hunt didn't turn out too much better. We got a huge snowstorm came through and pushed all the elk around and made it impossible for us to get anywhere. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I can't bash Colorado too much. I know a lot of people that have had a lot of success there. I know some people from there, and so I won't completely bash them, but I will say maybe just stay out of Denver.
Yeah, we're not gonna bash the state. Just stay out of Denver.
Yep.
Speaking of Colorado, like I'll send you the article later after we get it off of here if you hadn't seen it. They released the wolves and everything. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the tagged wolf, one of the collared wolves got killed the other day, and they say that after they checked it out and everything, they're calling it like predator predation, and they say a cougar killed it.
Interesting.
Very interesting, because I'm like, huh, like that was so, like, I guess the cougar didn't like the wolves encroaching on his territory.
Maybe so, that cougar had probably never seen a wolf. He might have just thought it was some dog or something, that was a coyote or something. I've been following the wolf stuff decently close. So I graduated from the University of Idaho. So I grew up down here, but went up there for college, just try something different. And so I had gotten to Idaho, just as the reintroduction up there had taken place. So, it was a few years after. And my sophomore year of college was the first year that they legalized wolf hunting up there. So I actually got to hunt wolves the first year it was legal up there. And I never got one, but I've seen several. But just, seeing what Idaho went through, and I knew several guys who had ranches in Idaho and Oregon and Montana and stuff, and just seeing like the hatred that those people had, and that was just from the ranching side, and then obviously the hunting community liked them even less, or I don't know, probably equal. And just to see all the mess that happened up there, and then for them to do the same thing in Colorado, when most of the experts will tell you there were probably some wolves in Colorado, coming down naturally from that first reintroduction. Mm-hmm. It wasn't happening fast enough, I guess, we'll blame the people in Denver again. It wasn't happening fast enough for them. So they felt they had to bring in some more. I could go on and on about wolves, but
I can too. I did a little like, probably 15-minute podcast about it. It turned into a rant, because I'm like, and it's like, without getting too political and into it and everything, like you said, you let a group vote on it that has no skin in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts. Like, mm-hmm. when it comes to like your rights, no matter what it is, if you don't have skin in the game, you're going to, I don't want to be like, oh, you shouldn't be able to vote on it if you're not part of it. But it's like, you're letting somebody vote on it that doesn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
It's like, I bet you if it would be like, well, we're going to turn them loose in the city, they'd be like, no, let's think about this.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hunting in Idaho, like you, what the story, I remember like the story about the little 4-point, that was you with the little 4-point mule deer and you didn't shoot, right? You and your buddy?
Yes. Yeah. My buddy Jasper. Yep. That was, I think that was the second year I got to hunt up there. And yeah, it was opening day and we were actually trailing a bull elk. We were hunting elk, but we both had deer tags as well. And yeah, I popped over a little hill and there's two little bitty, I mean, yearling 4-corn mule deer. And he just got jazzed up. I still say it all the time. I Jasper and I still hunt together as often as we can. He really is. He is the definition of a meat hunter. Like as long as it's a legal animal, he's down to go. And so I talked him off the ledge that trip. But he actually, I can't remember if I told this in that episode or not. He actually went back there the last weekend of the season with his uncle and shot one of those. I mean, can't say it was the exact same deer.
Yeah, but probably so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, y'all are hunting elk, so that'll bring me into the next thing there. Oklahoma elk hunting, like we talked about. Y'all's draw system up here for that's a little weird to me because, like, you can put in for a point and you can buy an extra point. So technically you could accumulate like 2 points a year.
Now that is new. That's new as of this year, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but people are like, oh, after the first year I did it, then like you got people like we both had 15, 20 years and they haven't drawn. Like I don't what's the
So I believe I'm right on this. I may get corrected, but yeah, you know, all these different states have kind of different point systems and draw systems. So some states, like I believe Colorado, it's just the highest point wins, and then you know, let's say everybody who has 20 points, they get a tag, and if there's left over, then whoever has 19 points gets one. I believe I'm right on that. The way Oklahoma does it is basically a point just gets you your name in the hat again. Again, I'm pretty sure I'm right in this. So if you have 10 points, your name goes into the hat 10 times. If you have 1 point, your name goes into the hat one time. And so I kind of like that system because you don't feel so hopeless. Like you got a chance. And so, you know, having more points is still beneficial because, again, that's more times your name is in the hat. But, at any given time, you could draw that tag. And so, you know, obviously the harder ones to draw are the bull tags. I've heard, you know, if you just really want to go elk hunting, I've heard if you put in for the cow tags that, you know, those are obviously not near as sought after. And I believe there's also more of them. Like they take more cows than they do bulls. So if you just really want to go elk hunting, put in for the cow tag, but me, like probably a lot of people, we want to shoot a bull. So that's what we're putting in for.
Exactly. That's my mind. Cause it's like I said earlier when we were talking, one of the reasons, like when we got the opportunity to come here, I had Florida, South Carolina, and Mississippi, Louisiana, and Oklahoma, all companies entertaining me to hire me, like Florida flew me in and everything. And I'd been to Oklahoma before, and that was like talked about earlier, I'd been out here hunting. And that was one of the things that I liked it out here. And property's not crazy expensive. Like, to give you an idea of where I'm from, a little small town in South Louisiana, property's averaging in between $45,000 and $60,000 an acre.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy pretty good of a property in certain parts of Oklahoma for that.
Right.
You know, it's like, so, and I have horses and everything. And I was like, you know what, this would be cool to go do. And one of the things that sold me on it, and my wife laughs at me because I'm like, you can elk hunt, you can pronghorn, you can mule deer, you can whitetail, and you can bear hunt.
Yep.
There's not many places you can go to and have the opportunity for those. And it's like, and yeah, I know the elk to draw system, like we just talked about, but it was like, you know, there's not always that opportunity. The bear, I've looked at actually, I got a guy that I can lease a property from that's surrounded by the national forest down south. It's southeast Oklahoma, the one McCurtain or whatever. The national forest there. I can lease some property from a guy down in that area. It's actually surrounded by the national forest, and I thought of, and you know, you can get, you could, it's got bear on it. So like, if you got your bear tag and killed it before they hit their quota, you got a good shot at doing that on that place.
Yep.
And it's like, Then the pronghorns, y'all's draw system, you can get over the counter tags, but you can also draw tags here, like points for tags. So,
yeah.
So how exactly does that work for a guy that's not, you know, 100% certain on y'all stuff right now?
Yeah. So, real quick, I'll back up to the bear for just a second, because you mentioned the quota. So there are either four or six counties now in southeastern Oklahoma where they have actually done away with the quota for archery season. So okay. you can legally kill a bear from opening day to closing day. I believe it's October 1st to October 25th, I think, something like that. It might not be quite that long. And then muzzleloader, they have a muzzleloader season, and that is still a quota, and it's pretty small. I want to say the muzzleloader quota is like 20 bears for the state. And so you have to call in, check the quota. When the quota is done, the season's done. But yes, but it, like I said, McCurtain's one of them. In McCurtain County, during the archery season, you can kill a bear as long as the season's open. So just wanted to clarify that real quick.
Well, then I might be reaching out to that guy.
Yep. And then on the antelope, so yes, there is a over-the-counter archery season, and it's valid on public land, private land, whatever you want to do. I had a guy on the show who has done that hunt, I believe twice, and was successful the second time. The first time he did it, he just tried to do the public land thing, and according to him, there's quite a few people out there on opening day of antelope season. But the next year, he actually just drove around, knocked on some doors, and got some private permission. And that's how he was able to do it the second year. And I want to say he got permission on, like, it was several thousand acres just by knocking on doors. So like I said, if you have a place to go for archery, it's over the counter. If you want to hunt with a rifle, then it is a draw tag. And so just like with the elk and everything, you put in for the draw. If you get the tag, then you got the tag. And I believe the tag is good anywhere, you know, private, public, whatever.
I believe so on that. And I know, like you just said about knocking on doors with the bow hunting for public and the bow hunting for antelope, working out here where I'm working at in the panhandle, I've talked to different farmers and everything in there, and they look at them as nuisance. Like they cannot, most of these guys out here, the farmers and ranchers cannot stand the antelope. And I'm like, okay. Like they're like, oh, they're worse than hogs. I'm like, well, that's saying a lot. And it's like, they have a strong disdain for them, which kind of surprised me because I didn't see where they were. I guess they just, the way they, you know, 10, 12 in a group and just going through the plots, I don't know. Like, I didn't really ask many questions like, well, why do you hate them? Because I was like, you know. But it was like several people told me that. I'm like, so I was like, cool. So I can, there's out here, I can probably get some private land to hunt antelope, which is my thought process. And because I've met a lot of people being out here, I've been 7 or 8 months is what I've been working in this full tail. And, you know, it's bad when there's like four. Where I'm working at is a main corridor for like them to distribute their drugs and everything.
Oh, really?
So, so like I'm working in a little town called Diamond, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
And, this is a main corridor, according to the cops, that they travel through for drugs and everything. Just like this morning, they had a high-speed chase that started south of my job, probably 15 miles, and he wrecked on my job site.
Oh.
And I go there, and I'm like, hey, does this have anything to do with me? Because I just see some cops in the wrecked car. And I know all the cops, and they're like, no, man, you're good. I said, oh, okay, then what happened? Oh, well, he started, we went to do a traffic stop because he was tailgating somebody. And we got out when we walked up beside the car, he sped away. And it was like, man, he was doing like 140 coming this way. Mm. And there's a Dodge Challenger they were chasing. And I'm like, oh, so he wrecks, they get him. And then he had a book sack, you know, like a backpack, right? In the car. I mean, they didn't put it on scales, but one of the cops I know was like, you ever seen 20 pounds of meth? And I'm like, nope. Can't say that I have. He said, well, you can now. I was like,
wow.
It was a backpack full of meth, and that's why he ran. He literally, when he wrecked the car, his head busted the windshield, like where he hit it with his head. He jumped out the car and took off running, and he's barefoot running down like the main highway, and they chased him down and catch him. And I'm just like, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
Like, but That's probably the fifth or sixth time in the 7 months on this job site that's happened.
Wow.
Yeah. Out here, like, it's a corridor, and it's not Oklahomans. They're Texas, California, Kansas. Like, they're running. This is just the only little town, and they go through it. And, you know, they get hit. They get stopped regularly. It's like, if you're stopping that many, imagine what's getting through.
Right.
And not little amounts of drugs they have on. That was what's crazy to me. Like, I'm expecting, like, you know, your thoughts on this process probably like, man, oh, they got a little bit of weed or something, like, or a little bit of narcotics, like, of a, you know, but not 20 pounds.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It's like, where the heck am I working at, man?
Yeah.
Yep. They've been watching Breaking Bad too much. Knowing a bunch of these guys out here and everything and talking to them, it's like, that's, nobody likes antelope out here. Then, we talked before the show about one of the wildlife, like the couple of wildlife managers around here and everything. And like, they've had guys, and I know you've talked to people on your podcast. Some's been on public, but most of it's been private, the mule deer out here. Like, they're getting more and more, which it's not an overwhelming herd right now, but they're getting more out here.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, nothing. I was just going to say, yeah, that is way up there on my bucket list to shoot an Oklahoma mule deer. Well, any mule deer. I've never killed a mule deer. Trying to this year, definitely trying real hard this year. And every year I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make it up to Northwestern Oklahoma. I'm going to try it. But it's just, you know, it's so far, complete opposite side of the state. And it's just long enough to go for, like, you know, in a weekend. Like, even if I took Friday off, you know, I'd spend half the day driving up there Friday to maybe get to hunt Friday, hunt Saturday, and have to come home Sunday. So, you know, it's just far enough to kind of be annoying. I really, really want to get up there sometime to try to hunt them.
Oh, it's 345 miles one way from my house where I'm at. So you're looking at GPS times is like 5 hours and 12 minutes. I think the best I've ever done it ends 4 hours and 38 to 42 minutes. And that's, you know, you fuel up before you leave. You're on 7 to 8 miles an hour over the whole way. You get no traffic. Like, it's pushing it.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's one of those, you're like, you know, it's okay, cool. I leave it, you know, 4 a.m. and I get here on a Friday morning. I get here at 9 o'clock, you know, for me. I think for you, it'd be a little further. And, you know, it's like, then what? I'd spend all day Friday scouting. Maybe, you know, bouncing around. And it's like, it's a hard hunt to make when you've got just a couple days.
Yeah, for sure.
And then it's like, that's one of them, like, I should have hunted it this year. I've been out here, like I said, I got out here in like September, and I should have hunted some of the public land out here this year and scouted it more than I did. But I just really didn't mess with it because work, it was, you work all day, and like, I'd work till dark, daylight to dark during, you know, cause it's dark at 5:30. So it was like, we were working daylight to dark. So now, you know, it'd be great because I'm working till 5:30 and it's daylight till 9.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Can't get it, you know, can't always get what we want.
That's so, right. That's right.
But, another thing I've jumped into doing, Iowa points. That's like a 5-year process. Is what everybody's saying. What is your take on that?
So I just got back from Iowa. I hunted Iowa this last year. And I kind of made up my mind years ago that if I was going to go, I was going to go to the pristine, you know, best of the best. And that's what I did. So I had 5 points, and then I missed a year. And then, you know, you can't apply the same year you get a point. So it took me 7 years to get up there total. And it's hard for me to say it wasn't worth it because, and I got fortunate. I just so happened to randomly meet a guy at the ATA show who me and him kind of hit it off, and he let me come up and hunt his actual farm. So I got to hunt private ground in Southern Iowa, Unit 5, best of the best. And, it was kind of a weird year up there. I mean, I saw 2 really good bucks, both of them probably 170 ish. Just, you know, didn't come into range. Saw, I don't know how many bucks I had in bow range. Like, I probably could have killed 30 different bucks, not just saw. I mean, I could have killed 30 different bucks, but I was just holding out for, you know, kind of what you go to Iowa for. And just like I went to dinner with him and his, I believe it was his cousin one night. And we were just at the little local Mexican food place. And he's like, oh, that's so-and-so. He killed a 230 2 years ago. Oh, that's so-and-so. He killed a, you know, two whatever. Like every, and like the guy that I was hunting with, he killed a two, I think a 226 on the property that I was hunting. And so it is a special place for sure. That being said, you know, those deer aren't just around every corner. Like I went up there knowing that I probably was not going to kill the biggest buck of my life. Yeah, you know, I've been fortunate. I've killed 175 inch deer here in Oklahoma. And so I went up there knowing that there was a good chance I was not going to kill the biggest deer of my life. I also went up there knowing there was a chance. There was a chance. So now I've reset. You know, I went up there, I didn't kill a buck, so I'm at zero. And so I've been trying to figure out myself what, you know, kind of my strategy moving forward will be. And I think I've decided, I don't know. It depends on what day you ask me, because I'm pretty sure that invite is still there. You know, if I saved up another 5 points, I'm sure I could go back, call that guy, and he'd let me come hunt again in that prime area. But I think there are a lot of really, really good hunting opportunities in Iowa that most people don't take advantage of. You know, if you go Western Iowa or Northern Iowa, you can hunt those places with like 2 points. So, I mean, you could go every 3 years and hunt Iowa. And so that's the battle I'm having with myself. And luckily, you know, I have 2 to 3 years to decide. But yeah, I've really been trying to decide if I want to go all in again and save up, you know, with point creep. By the time I get all those points, you may have to have 6 or 7 to get up there and hunt that same area. Whereas, like I said, I could get 2 or 3 points. And yeah, I may not have a chance at killing a 230 inch deer, but you know, you can go up there and have a lot of fun and kill 150, 160 inch deer. And I'm not good enough yet to turn my nose up at that. And so it'd be hard for me to turn that down.
Oh, extreme. And that's what I said. I put in, you know, for preference point this year. And it's like, so I told my wife, I was like, I've got 2 to 3 years before I can even consider like where I can actually draw.
Yeah.
So it's like, I might as well just put in for them and then start collecting and make a decision. But there's, you know, but also there's a lot of good over the counter states too that give you the opportunity at a good deer now.
Yeah.
And you know, you just like with Oklahoma, they're changing the you know, they change like changing the rules on some of the stuff with out of state hunters and everything. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, thank God I'm resident now. And because my first year here, we got here in August. We had a rent house because we had our house in South Louisiana still, and I put it for sale, but I was like, I'm not changing my license over to a rent house. And I know you're supposed to do it within 30 days of moving and, you know, just all these rules.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I'm not doing it. So I bought out-of-state license to deer hunt my first year here, even though I had been here when deer season started 60 days.
Yeah.
And should have already had my license changed, could have had my license changed over and could have bought resident license. Mm-hmm. And like people laugh at this, like, so instead of spending $40 and getting your license changed over, then having to go spend $40 more to get it swapped again or whatever, just the address, you spent $300. I'm like, it was the time that it took to get it changed. I said, I went to Shawnee and I was like, I was still there for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I was like, so when you figure my time into it, 8 hours was worth the
$300.
Yeah. Like, yeah. If I had to go twice. And, they laughed. So it was like this past year, you know, we'd bought our place and I'd had it all changed so I could be the resident license. And then like my cousin actually has an outfitter service here in Oklahoma, Twisted Cedar Lodge.
Uh-huh.
And he gets a lot, and he's from Louisiana also. And like, he has that up here. And I texted him the other day when all that had changed. I was like, hey, you see this? And he's like, no. I was like, that's like, if they buy their license now, they're locked into this price. So you better be like reaching out to your clients.
Yeah.
It's like, and then another cool thing, like may, I don't know if you've looked into it much. You know, I was thinking about doing some research on possibly doing a podcast, but it's right up your alley too. Like of putting the information out, you saw where they're going to start doing the CWD. The deer that are more like immune to CWD, for example, like the yeah. Start releasing them.
That's actually what I was doing before we started recording, was researching that. I'm planning to talk about it on the intro to this podcast. I was getting up to speed just as we started recording.
That's funny, because that's like I said, I was like, that's right up his alley. And it's like, I need to sit down and do it, because I'm interested. Because to me, I kind of feel like it's going to help. Not only will it help with the CWD issues, which that's a whole nother podcast in itself too, because like that's a, you know, and there's a lot of different ways to look at that. And you know, though most of those deer that are genetically immune to that are pen raised and have better genetics than your wild deer herd, so that should help antler growth and durability within your herd and other aspects of it. So it's like, is it gonna, you know, in the next 5-10 years, whatever, like, and I know this is just a, you know, wild thing to say, but is it gonna affect Oklahoma's deer herd into making it like a, where a 175, 180, 200 inch deer is a more common thing? You know?
Yeah. And you know, there's no way to know. And you know, I'll say two things on that. One is, I highly doubt that the state's gonna go out and spend thousands of dollars on some giant breeder buck. You know, I just don't think that's the case. And then two, you know, I just don't know how much of those genetics will stay when you release that deer out into the wild, you know? And I don't, you know, obviously it can't hurt. I say that, it just depends on the genetics of what they release. But I don't, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't see them releasing, you know, 200 inch mainframe typicals out into the wild during this program. But I don't know
any bucks. I think it's all going to be does.
I believe it says, and I got it pulled up here actually. Okay. It says they're going to release does and bucks.
Oh wow!
In the spring of 26 is what they're calling for.
I would have released only does, and then yeah. But I don't know, like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, yeah. They got to ear tag them so people don't shoot them. Like, what are we doing here? Like,
So I'm reading this straight off the government website. The amendment revises the provisions related to the release of deer bred to be genetically durable against chronic waste and disease to allow release of male and females February 1st, 2026 through April 15th, 2026.
Huh.
So.
Okay. Well, it's going to be something to see. Like, yeah.
I believe for $500, you can put in to have them released on your property.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. So,
and like, not getting too much into what we talked about prior, but like my place, like, yeah, I told you what was next to it and what had happened. Uh-huh. So it's like, I'd be kind of, you know, I kind of wonder what I have around, you know what I mean? Like what genetically, like, I know they were all, you know, way prior to this, but it's like, so they're not the immune system that you would have now to it, but it's like, when you have those that got hurt, when you have that happen, it's like, did any of those have it to start with?
Right.
You know, and it's like, but you know, it's like, I don't think y'all have it in that many counties up here, do you?
No, I believe it's only been in one, maybe two counties out in the Panhandle. Yep. I know Texas County for sure, and maybe in one neighboring county.
I think Texas, and either is it Cimarron or Beaver?
Cimarron sounds right.
Yep. It's Texas and Cimarron. I think that's the last two out here, and that's the last two that, and that's the two that had it.
Yeah.
But that then I mean, let's see. Yeah, we talked about Iowa. We talked about something I like to ask everybody, and I think it's something you do too. Who got you into hunting?
Man, that is a great question. If I'm being completely honest, I don't know if anybody did. So I was very fortunate. I was not raised in a hunting family. My dad doesn't hunt. My older brothers hunted a little bit. My grandpa on my mom's side hunted a little bit growing up, but didn't in his later life. I honestly believe that it's just kind of instinctually in me. I know a lot of people will laugh at that, but I think I've mentioned this on here before. I think what really got me into hunting, so my dad would take us dove hunting when I was younger. That was his big thing. Like September 1st would come around and he'd pull us out of school and he'd take me and my brothers dove hunting. But my brothers had a friend who his family was really into deer hunting, and he got to invite them, and both my brothers got to kill a deer with him when they were like junior high school age. And I was always the younger brother that never got to go. And I think that's actually why I got so into hunting, because I just felt left out. Like I just kind of wanted to go with them and, you know, be one of the big kids, but I never got invited. But I was fortunate that my family has always been in ag. You know, my dad farmed and ranched, my grandpa and my mom's side farmed and ranched. So I had places to go. I just didn't have anybody to teach me. And so when I got into junior high, there was a guy from church. He was my youth leader, and he was originally from Georgia, and he had kind of grown up hunting. And so he kind of started taking me, and he didn't know enough to really teach me, but he had a driver's license. And so, you know, he'd take me out and we'd hang out and hunt. And then once I turned 16 and got my own driver's license, then it was no hold bar. And my grandpa had a big place right on the Red River. And so all through high school, I'd play in my football game Friday night, and I'd drive out to his place and sleep in my truck, and I'd hunt all day Saturday and Sunday morning and then come back home. And I'd do that every weekend during the fall. And so, like I said, I can't really point my finger at one particular person that got me into hunting, but that's kind of that was my introduction story.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I grew up in a family. My dad, when you're talking about your friend Jasper being, you know, the meat hunter, that's my dad.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I laughed. My dad's 64 or 5. He just turned 65. And it's like, this past year, I killed two deer during deer season, and he killed two. He was hunting public land in South Louisiana, and he killed a doe 7 days before I killed mine, or 6 days. Then the weekend before I killed my 11 point, no, I killed my 11 point on Friday, and he killed an 8 point on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was laughing at him. I said, how'd you manage to shoot this 8 point? Because he's like, Jasper, if it's legal, he's going to shoot.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that's what came out. Yep. He's like, and I laughed because it's like, I grew up and, you know, like I said, I killed my first deer when I was 10. I hunted with my dad. You know, my dad took us, time I was probably seven, eight years old. We were squirrel hunting and in the woods. We were camping every weekend with, you know, my mom and dad and like all my dad's family, because my dad comes from a large family. It was him and seven siblings, and all of them hunt. We all used to hunt together and everything. And then, you know, so you grow up, like, it'd be 15 to 25 of us go over to wildlife management just in our group to hunt. Mm. So big group, and it was just the camaraderie of it and everything. Then it's like, as I got older, I actually started, oddly enough, like, I wanted to hunt by myself. I didn't even go camping with them anymore. Like, I kind of was like, it's just too, like, they, everybody laughs. They're like, oh, you know, like, me being a people person. I'm like, no, I can talk and do, but like this, we're not, and or I can do it in person. Like, do what I got to do on the job. But like, outside of that, I'm in the woods or on the water. Like, I'm the alone type person.
Yeah.
It's like, and I think that's what draws me to both so much. And my oldest son, like I say, he doesn't hunt, but like fishing, you get that dude a rod and a reel and you're not going to see him. Like, he's going to stay out there and like, he's going to fish. And my youngest one, he'll fish, but you tell him it doesn't matter the weather. Like, he made a trip. He sat with me on a hunt. It was drizzling and raining, like 40 degrees this past year. And I'm like, he's like, let's go. And I'm like, he's not going to go.
Yeah.
And he won't stay out there long. I'm literally like, sitting there, and I'm like, man, I don't want to be the one to tell him let's go back to the house, but I'm dying. Mm-hmm. Like, and we stuck it out. He stayed till dark, and it was from 3 o'clock to like dark. And I'm over here, like, anytime he wants to say let's go, like, I'm gonna go. Like, and he wouldn't. And I'm like, and he's gonna be, you know, he's gonna be that one that sticks out no matter what. But back to where, you know, I grew up, my dad, you know, hunting and everything, we hunted all the time. Then I got big into fishing. And I quit hunting for about 5 years and then got back into it. And because a guy I used to hunt with, I grew up hunting Mississippi and a lot. And we hunted public land in Louisiana, but we were a hunting club in Mississippi that ran deer dogs. And I know that's like a controversial thing, like dogs and deer, but it's something, I don't know if you've ever done it or been around it. It is, you know, like how people in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and all that, they do like man drives. That's like, and the people, it's just this big thing to them. It's like, it's it's culture. Well, that's dog hunting in the South.
Yeah.
And, but like, it's the coolest thing in the world to hear, like, you know, 7, 8, 10 Walker deer dogs, just the hammer and like, and they're, you know, and they live for it. Just like, it's crazy. They're bred for it. That's what they want. They're jumping at the bits and to go. And it's like, so I grew up doing that. And, I've killed a couple deer in front of the dogs and, you know, people like, oh, you know, that's not sport. Like, I don't know about you, but you ever try to shoot a deer running wide open across like a dozer trail with a rifle?
Yeah.
Go do it. Then come back and tell me that's not sporty.
Yeah.
You know, like, and, so grew up doing that and everything. And just hunting was part of what we did. That's what we did all the time. And yeah, like I said, my dad still hunts and everything. And the first week of October, I'm taking off of work for a week and going down to North Louisiana because there's wildlife management that we bow hunt. It's bow hunt only. We hunt it. We got a group going to it. And it's like, I was talking about it in one of my podcasts the other day. One of my buddies asked me, he's like, you've hunted that place a lot. Yeah. How many deer have you killed on? I was like, I've never shot one. And he looked at me and said, well, why have you never, have you seen deer? I'm like, oh, everybody I've ever taken. And I got to count the people. It's like 8 people. They've all shot deer there. And he's like, why haven't you shot anything? I said, because of all, I sat in my stand and videoed 11 different does one day on opening day. And I was like, because I've had pictures of, I know what type of bucks are on this place. And, you know, there's 140 and 150 inch class deer on this place. So I've held out and not shot at anything because I'm waiting on that. And I've the day I videoed 11, all of them were in bow range. I had one at like 3 to 4 yards. And it's like, I think where I get more enjoyment out of it is bringing the other people in and like getting to teach them. Like you were saying, you didn't have anybody that just really, you know, like that teacher person, but that's the cool thing to me. And like getting teachable boys and everything. And that was, I know you have children and that's something that like, I guess where I want to ask there, like that's as much of a pain as it can be. It's the enjoyment of teaching them, I think, you know, cause like it's just, you understand what I'm trying to say? Like I'm trying to figure out that, but it's like, yeah. So I think getting to pass that to the next generation, like you didn't, that's why it really taught you, but you're getting to teach somebody and it makes it all worth it.
Yeah. And you know, like I said, you know, I didn't really have somebody to teach me the ins and out of hunting. I'm pretty well self-taught. That's a big reason I started this podcast because I thought, man, maybe I can be that for somebody out there who doesn't have somebody to teach them. And that honestly is a big reason I started this. And, you know, when we were first talking, you said part of the reason you liked my shows, cause it's kind of a mix of entertainment and education. And that is exactly what I was, you know, setting out to do. So that was a great compliment. You kind of paid me accidentally.
You're welcome. And it's like, what, and like the coolest thing to me is like, I'll take my wife laughs at me because like I said, my dad taught me, he still hunts all the time and everything. Then you brought up earlier, you know, like I've had Dan Anfalt on, I've talked to John Eberhardt and, you know, it's like different guys and everything, but it's like, and I listen to a bunch of different podcasts and I'll get to chuckling because these guys like are saying something and I'm like, oh, well, I've done it that way my whole life, but never knew there was a reason, you know, like, and, cause it's like, take my, you know, like I said, I have horses. My grandfather is 81 this year. And he still rides horses and he's down South Louisiana. We get on to him because he'll still break colts if you don't watch him, you know, like, but he's one of them. Like, I remember sitting on the fence from the time I was like 2 years old, watching him do stuff, 2, 3 years old, like my whole life on the fence, just watching. And like, you'd ask him, well, why did you do that? And he'd be like, why did I do what? He didn't even know you know, what are you talking about? It's like, my wife has asked me, like, I'd be out there messing with the horses. And she's like, why did you just do that? And I'm like, what did I do? And she'll tell me, I'm like, well, I don't know. That's the way he did it. So it's like the hunting things. And it's like, well, that's the way I was taught, or that's, you know, I've learned that. And so I take it for granted that that's just not, everybody knows this.
Right.
And, you know, and that can go into any part of life. People, like, you just think everybody knows the same thing you do. And it's like, and that was the coolest thing about yours and some of these others. Like, even though I might know something, I'm like, well, why did I do that? Then you'll be like, well, I learned this, and this is why, this is what it did. And everything. I'm like, oh, well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest things. Like, I listened to different ones, and it's like, okay, that's cool. And it's like, but it's you, what I appreciate out of yours, like you just said, like, to you were self-taught, and you get all there and explain it, and there's like, you know, there's, you're not worried about, well, this person, like, what are these people going to think of me? Like, and I'm like, that's what I enjoy about yours. Like, you're not worried about, and there's too many people that worry about what the other person thinks now.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about it. You're just, hey, this is what it is, and this is why. And that makes it cool to me. And I'm appreciative of that.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate that. And I'm just now, I think next week, my birthday's coming up in the next week or two, and I'll be 35. So I'm not an old man by any means, but I feel like I'm kind of getting to that point in my life where I got a little experience under my belt, and I've been hunting a long time, and was fortunate. You know, I've been killing some good bucks lately, so I feel like I have, you know, I know it works for me, and that may not work for everybody. And I try to present that as well. Just like, you know, you were talking about your place. I've never stepped foot on your place, and something that works for me may not work for you, but that's kind of the beauty of this, you know, podcast world that we're in. And like you mentioned, all these other people that, you know, like Dan Infault, we talked about, like, I have learned a ton from Dan Infault, but I don't really hunt how Dan Infault hunts. Like, I don't go hunt these giant pieces of public, and I have to be a little bit worried about bumping a deer, because, you know, if he runs onto the neighbors, I can't go hunt on the neighbors. And so, you know, I think it's very important to draw your knowledge from a wide pool and then narrow it into the stream that you actually do and practice. So yeah.
And I think one of the, like, biggest things I picked up, like, from Dan was, like, hunt hot sign when hot sign's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, and it's like, people will see a scrape or whatever and automatically, oh, and it's like, well, 95% of the time they're making that at night.
Yeah.
Then it's like that 5% is when you got to hunt that scrape. And then you got to have the weather right that creates that deer to work that scrape in daylight, and that 5%.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's what, there's so many variables to that, but it's like, you know, people hunt scrapes all the time. It's like, I'll go through, like, okay, cool, there's a scrape. That doesn't really mean anything to me unless the weather's going to be right at that time frame. Then I'll hunt that scrape or in that area. But if the weather's not right for it to try and, like, make him change his pattern, because his pattern's gonna be nice. If there's not something that's gonna line up to make him change, then all I'm doing is, I can't think of the podcast I was listening to the other day, and the guy said his oldest son would be like, well, Dad, like, I don't want to go deer waiting. He doesn't call it deer hunting. He's never called it deer hunting. He's always called it deer waiting. And I'm like, that's a pretty good thought process of it. Like, why would I go sit on a scrape? Because then I'm deer waiting. I'm not hunting.
Yeah.
Like, you're waiting for that deer to come to that. And if the conditions aren't right, he's not going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like hunting over feed and bait and everything. Well, if it's not in the right place, that big buck's not going to come out to it. Mm-hmm. He's going to skirt it. He's going to check it out. And that's not how he's going to use it. So, like, you have to put thought into every stealth that you do. And hunting over beds is really cool if you're hunting, like you said, large areas of public and you don't care if you push them. But when you're hunting a place, when you're hunting private property and you can't, if you push it off to the neighbors, they're like, oh crap, now what am I going to do? So you have to take, like you said, little pieces from everybody and piece what's together that works for you.
Right.
And, you know, that's any, the hunting world, the fishing world, whatever, because it's like, it like with me with fishing, like, and I will relate it to the hunting, is a confidence bait. Like, when you're fishing, you're like, especially bass fishing, you've got a certain bait you've got confidence in that you're going to throw, and it's going to catch fish because you're confident in it. And for some reason that makes it, you know, Well, the same thing with deer hunting. If you're not confident in what you're going in to do and the area you're going to hunt, it's going to blow. You're going to screw it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, and all right. Wind or scent control? I get you on the Dan in fault.
Oh man.
They're both really cool guys. If anybody like yeah. listen, they're both really cool guys. I've had them both on my podcast. I talked to John last week or 2 weeks ago. I'd have to check in my phone. John's supposed to be coming on to do another one. When I get them lined up, I'll let you know. And if you want to jump in there with us, you're more than welcome. John's really cool to talk to. I may be getting Dan back on, and I'll let you know also. I'm working on that with Dan.
Gotcha.
And, they're both really cool guys. So not trying to like stir anything to anybody with that, but like one's a stick control guy, one's mm-hmm. a wind guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, I fall somewhere in between. I've leaned more towards each side at different parts of my hunting career. The more I hunt, the more I feel like there's just no way to completely trick a deer's nose. And I know John would argue at that. I do have some scent control. Like I wash my clothes. I use, you know, sprays before every single hunt. But for me, I'm not reliant on those things because I am also very much playing the wind. And so for me, the scent control is just kind of, you know, if I can help myself out, you know, 5%, 5 to 10%, then to me, it's worth taking, you know, the 30 seconds it takes to spray down or, you know, the little bit it takes to wash your clothes before you go in there. But I 100%, I am always hunting the wind. And in the right situation, you know, if I know my target buck is going to be there and the wind is maybe a little iffy, if it's completely wrong, I'm not going. But if it's maybe on the verge, then I will step up my game, you know, take the scent control a little bit more seriously and like bring my Ozonix with me to the stand and, you know, try to help myself out that little bit if the wind's iffy, but I'm not going to, you know, if the wind's completely, like, I don't know if you heard my episode of the buck I killed last year on October 5th. I wanted to kill that deer opening day so bad because I've never killed a deer on opening day. I had never killed a buck before. I think the earliest I'd ever killed a mature buck was October 26th, but I had this buck pattern. He was coming in, but opening day, the wind was, I mean, just could not have been more wrong. And so I did not hunt opening day. My first hunt of the year was October 5th, and I killed him my first hunt of the year. And I honestly believe that no matter how much I would have, you know, sprayed down, washed clothes, whatever, and I was even in a blind, an enclosed blind, I just don't think I would have killed that deer. And so for me, being patient, learning these deer and their behavior and playing that wind, I think is how you kill deer more than just some gimmicky scent control stuff.
I believe that too. Like my place, I won't hunt it unless the wind's a certain way. And if I'm looking at it and it's not where I want the wind to be, then I'm not even that. If I'm supposed to be hunting my property, if the wind's not the right place for it that day, then no, I'm not hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, I told my wife, I was like, I need to pick up. Like, I've got some public land close to me. I was like, I need where I live at. And I'm like, I need to go scout it and find a few places because I'll hunt one of those, not really worried about the wind. You know, I'll move because I've got more area I can move around to make the wind work for me.
Yeah.
But when you're, you know, mine's a ravine there. If it's blowing, it's going a certain way, then like you're SOL. Like it is, mm-hmm. it is what it is. And now scent control, I have something I've always done. Not going to say what it is because a lot of people call me insane. So it works for me. And it's sort of like that confidence thing, I guess. And it works for me. And that's, it, you know, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And, I'm a wind guy because, and I've gotten, you know, used to, I didn't worry about anything. I just hunted. And then it's like the last few years of really pushing into it and seeing and putting the effort in to learn more than, you know, what I knew and take it to a new level of like putting the work in to really understand what was going on. You know, why did I see this deer? What was this? What was that? And it was like, you know, and keeping like a notebook and a log of everything. And, which it turns into like, some people are like, oh, I mean, how can you enjoy hunting if you're doing that? It's like, well, that's why I enjoy it. It's more of the numbers for me and the statistics in behind of why, you know? And once you get that figured out, you can pattern, hey, he's going to be here, you know, at this time frame usually. Like if you learn a deer, you can learn his pattern. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like I said, I'm a wind guy just like you mainly. I think that kind of wrap it up where I wanted to go with this one. What you got, John?
Oh, man, that's the only thing we haven't touched on that we talked about was Kansas, but neither one of us have actually hunted there. So I don't know how much we can say about that, but
this is my first year to put in for points. And is it your first year?
No. So this is my first year actually put in to draw a tag. So I actually bought a Kansas point 6 years ago and I've never hunted there. And for the state of Kansas, if you do not use your point within 5 years, it goes away. And so last year, just to keep my point from going away, I bought a second point. So I actually have 2 points. And so from most of the research I've done, if you have 1 point, you're almost guaranteed a tag in most units. It used to be a few years ago, you could almost draw every year and then just more interest, you know, now it's kind of every other, but from what I've seen with 2 points, I'm essentially 100% to draw. But I'm trying to get a mule deer tag. So the way Kansas does that, I don't know if you're familiar with that. Uh-huh. So you have to put in for a whitetail tag. And when you draw the whitetail tag, you can then be put into the pool for a mule deer tag. So I'm like 100% for the whitetail, should be. But those points don't do anything for the mule deer. Your points don't matter whatsoever for mule deer. So I have about 100% chance of drawing a whitetail tag. And for the unit I put in, I think I have about a 20% chance to draw a mule deer tag.
I think mule deer in Kansas, correct me if I'm wrong, are more towards the northwestern corner, right?
Yeah, there's some in the southwest. I had a guy on a few weeks ago that was hunting. He was actually hunting further east than I would have thought. And he mentioned he saw some pretty good mule deer. But I think pretty well, just about anywhere in that western third, you got a chance of running into some.
Yeah, we're it's a group of us. One of my guys that did podcast with a few weeks ago, one of my original guys that's been around since I started Delta Flodge, and which to jump back into that, I really didn't Delta Flodge Outdoors. It was actually I developed a deer feed and attracted and everything, and I've got to get back into producing it and everything. But what was crazy, like, I'm not going to say it's hog proof, but hogs 99% of the time don't touch it.
Wow.
And you can feed it on the ground as a powder. You can feed it straight on the ground. I'll see if my dad sent me the picture. He's got a picture of a doe that's like got her head stuck in the ground, like where she's ate a hole, where they've ate a hole in the ground to eat this stuff off the dirt and everything. Huh. So that was how Delta Flodge Outdoors come about. I actually developed a feed and come up with it, called it Cajun Blend, that I've actually sat down and developed. I have about 9 others that I could get set up to go to market and everything. And I'm working on getting stuff bagged is a nightmare with proper bags and everything, because everybody wants like a 10,000 minimum bag order. Then like it's a whole nother, you know. You better believe in your product and yourself if you're ready to put it on market.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and it's like I've had opportunities before, then, you know, like without getting too much interpersonal, like I'm 39. I was on the verge putting when I was actually married the first time to my first wife when I developed it, and we ended up getting divorced, and that was I stopped messing with all of it for a few years and everything. Then started back and stopped and started back. So you know how that momentum swing goes. And it's like, so that was in that, but I've developed that. I actually have some of my own cover scents and stuff and that's one of the things, like I said, I use and do, and my own cover scents. And I have a few different ways of doing stuff. Like you could pick something like, for example, honeysuckle. Like, let's just use that. I could take a bunch of honeysuckle, go through my process and send it back to you as a liquid spray that you can spray on yourself or anything else, and it smells like honeysuckle. I can do it with thyme, I can do it with corn, I can do it with whatever. And I don't have like any degree in science or anything. My mind just works like with your age, you'll know what I'm talking about. Remember the movie Rain Man? My mind's kind of like his. I'm out there at times and it just stuff clicks and I get stuck on it and I'll just keep doing it until I figure it out.
Gotcha.
But so that's the background of what I should have started with, and I apologize for that. But one of the boys originally from the group, that Brant, and another one of our friends, Matt. Matt's actually from Kansas. And Brant and Matt went probably 5 years ago now to Kansas, where Matt's from, and hunted, and they bow hunted. And Brant's like, I had some opportunities. He said, I could have killed 130, 140 inch deer 3 or 4 different times. He said, but I wanted bigger. Yeah. He said, because you go to Kansas, you want bigger. Yeah. And I'm like, cool. Yeah. And they're won't put in to up for the area where Matt's from, because there's some personal land, like his family owns and has access to like 1,000 acres that we can hunt. Plus there's a lot of public land right there. So we've got a good variety of stuff we can hunt. And they're like, let's put in for points this year and next, then draw for the 2026 season. But they're wanting to go rifle. And I'm like, I hope y'all got warm clothes, like warm clothes. Like, you're going to be the 2nd through the 11th. I was like, it could be 70 degrees or it could be a foot of snow all around, dude. Like, y'all not talking about this?
Yeah.
It's like, and I'm kind of chuckling because I'm like, and they was like, yeah, you just bundle up. I'm like, no, you use base layers.
Yeah.
And I was like, do y'all have base layers? And they was like, oh, so you moved to Oklahoma now and you got base layers? And I was like, no, I had base layers in South Louisiana.
Yeah.
I was like, because I hunted no matter the weather. Y'all didn't.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't hunt box stands and everything. Y'all did. Like, you know, either I was in my, for years, I used an old man climber, you know, the original, mm-hmm. like the Netsy. Yeah. Then I switched to saddle hunting like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've always been out in the weather. So like, you know, and I chuckle because I'm like, no, dude. I was like, so that's our Kansas trip in a nutshell is 2026. It's going to be December of 2026. And I'm like, man, I know my luck. It's going to like snow and sleet and rain every day. Like,
uh-huh.
And I'm like, I hope they're ready for this. And I told my buddy, I was like, look, I'll take off the whole time. Like, we'll get there the day before season opens and leave the day after rifle season closes. So I was like, I have the vacation time to do that. I was like, but also know that like, if I have the opportunity to kill my buck and doe like the 1st or 2nd day, and he's the size I want, then I'm killing and heading home. Like,
that's right.
I'll go grab some like over the counter Missouri tags or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I want to finish out the hunt. And he chuckled. He's like, all right. But that was, you know, that's I think we hit a variety of things there. And I know it was kind of I rambled at times and I apologize for that. But
that's all right.
I'm one of them that, like I said, I'll get on something and I fixate on it, but I should have led with where the company originally developed, and that was being in South Louisiana, developed, you know, Delta Lodge Outdoors, and I built a feed called Cajun Den, because it was just the thing being down there. Cajun's the big thing, so there was probably some alcohol involved, and we came up with Cajun Blend, and the little saying with it was, once you go blend, everything else is bland, and just, we threw it together, and like, I actually did I went and did a live sports talk radio show with a guy that he was a big, he did a bunch of stuff with LSU and everything. And he brought me on to talk about my feed because he'd actually got something from me and used it and killed a deer. So he brought me on. Then I've been a co-host for like the next 6 or 8 weeks during the college football season, back when, and it'll give you the time frame, was when Johnny Manziel was playing at A&M and they beat Bama that year.
Uh-huh.
And, because the week before they played Bama on the show, I was like, if Johnny shows up and plays Johnny football, like Bama loses. And they're all like, you're crazy. Well, they beat him. The following week, he's like, hey, dude, you got to be here. And like, I got to meet all kinds of like pro football players and everything. They'd come to his house and hang out. It was really cool.
Nice.
And you would be amazed at how many of those guys actually hunt. And a lot of them didn't start hunting until they got to the NFL. And they met different guys that they had never met that were hunters.
Yeah.
So you get guys, you know, I'm talking like inner city guys grew up And now they're going deer hunting because that was one of their buddies took them. It was, you know, this Iowa boy or Kansas boy that made it to the pros, you know, like these country guys made it to. Yeah. And now they're playing with these inner city guys. They're like, man, you ever been hunting? And they start taking them. And these guys become like, they become like obsession to them too. And I'm like, that is so cool how that, you know, no matter where you're from, like hunting can draw people together.
For sure. For sure. Well, Julius, I hate to cut you off, but we've been going about an hour and a half now, and my family's going to be home any second, so I better shut this down. So, but man, I can't thank you enough for reaching out to me. This was an awesome episode. Like you said, we covered stuff from all over the place, but really, really good chat. Before I let you go, though, real quick, if people hear this and they want to hear more from you, where should they go?
Delta Flodge Outdoors, and they can hit it. They can go to just type in Delta Flodge Outdoors, and I have it on YouTube. Any podcast supplier from, you know, like anybody that Spotify to what is it on Apple? At the podcast through Apple, anything that you can get a podcast on, type in Delta Flodge Outdoors. Like I said, YouTube, Delta Flodge Outdoors, Facebook, TikTok, everything's just Delta Flodge Outdoors.
Awesome. Awesome. Just in case some of your listeners hear this and want to find me, you can just find me at Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast. Instagram is by far the best. I also have a Facebook page, but I'm not on there very consistently. So if you want to find me, definitely Instagram. And that's about it. I am a part of the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, so you can check them out online and find a whole bunch of different shows and listen to me online if that's what you want to do. But other than that, you can find me also just on my individual feed, Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast, like you mentioned, anywhere you listen to podcasts. So, Julius, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciated this, and can't wait to hear some more from you in the future.
Oh, same here, John. I appreciate you taking the time and doing it with me.
Absolutely. There we go, folks. If you stuck with me for this whole time, congratulations to you. I appreciate it. This weekend, I'm planning to head to the ranch and plant some food plots, so be praying for me. Pray the weather holds out. Thank you guys for listening to the show. Love you guys. And until next week, I will see y'all right back here on the Oklahoma Outdoors Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.